Writers and readers, if you love am writing, and I know you do, you will also love my weekly am reading email. For my entire life, I have been the go-to for friends and family looking for their next read. I have an uncanny ability to hear what someone last loved and ping what they'll love next. And I translate that into weekly recommendations, all focused on the kinds of books that you'll look forward to returning to at the end of a long day. Plus, a behind-the-scenes, free-flowing look at how my writing and reading collide. It is totally free, and I think you'll really like it. You can find it at kjdelantonia.com, kjda.substack.com, or by clicking on my name in Substack, or of course in the show notes for this podcast. Come hang out with me even more. I promise you won't be sorry.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three. Okay. Hey, listeners. KJ here, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast where we help you play big in your writing life, love the process, and finish what matters. So, I am talking to you as an intro before I bring you into my conversation with Jenny Nash to kind of give you a picture of what it is that you're about to get. So, Jenny and I have been talking about the novel in process that I am working on. She's kind of helping me, not officially coaching me, kind of really helping me to do something even bigger and better than I've ever done before, which I think is what we are all always trying to do with our next books. And it doesn't mean anything about our previous books other than A, that we have a tendency to raise the bar on ourselves, and B, we just, you know, we said something and now we want to say maybe the same thing or something similar again and better. So in this episode, in this conversation, Jenny and I are talking about a moment that I think is going to be familiar to a lot of us when I am drafting along and what I realize is that I've got things in the wrong order. I can't give this piece of the plot or even this piece of the emotion to the reader yet, and how I went into the draft to fix that without losing my momentum. I hope it's going to be helpful for you. It is nothing if not a completely honest and somewhat brutal look at the process and how hard it is to talk to someone else about it and how hard it just is to do the work and figure it out. And I have to say that along with probably all of you, there are definitely times when I look at it and I'm like, just couldn't somebody else just tell me what to write? But we have to tell ourselves, and that is hard, and I hate it. But I did not hate this episode. It was super helpful for me, and I hope it's going to be helpful for you. So without further ado, I drop you into mid-conversation with me and Jenny about the novel that I am currently writing, which we don't describe in great detail for a lot of reasons, but I don't think it's going to matter. Okay, I hope you enjoy, and if you have thoughts about this episode, please pop them into the show notes. You should be subscribed at amwritingpodcast.com because we are working really hard to create a community that I know you want to be a part of. And this kind of conversation, brutal and honest and maybe a little too open between me and Jenny, is exactly the kind of thing we want to share. And I hope that when it tells you that the challenges that you are facing and the sense that this is so hard and it must be easier for everyone else is not right, gosh, I really hope that's exactly what you wanted to hear. And also, I hope we hear back from you. All right, off we go. I had written about 13,000 words-ish and sort of vaguely call it the first five chapters, sort of. I have my my loose, rickety inside outline, which gets to the end and becomes almost an only emotion outline, because I'm not entirely sure. I know what's going to happen. I'm not entirely sure how. And you know, we talked about that. So that's fine. Like, I'm working from that. I'm not working. It's not like, and next I will write this. It's more like, here's the whatever scene I write next, here's why it has to happen plot-wise, and here's why it has to happen emotion-wise, but it may not be exactly what I outlined. So I'm actually making an outline of what I actually wrote as I write it, which is kind of fun. But then as I'm doing that and kind of comparing what I think is going to happen to what I'm writing, I realized after I sent you a big chunk, which you were partly excited about and partly not, and then it was great. I realized that I needed some things were out of order. Like, I started to write the thing that was the next up in my kind of vague plan. And then I was like, oh, wait, like, I can't have this person can't be doing this before, or like, I need anyway. So I've ended up, I went back, but I'm not revising. I'm actually sticking in new things already. So it's like that 13,000 words is stretching out into, you know, probably 20,000 words as we approach. So I'm still in the world before the big death happens. Because there were things, but also in part really because it was fun. Getting too long. Like,
yeah.
I needed to move some action. I was like, oh, well, now I'm supposed to have like five more things happen before the death. I can't put another 10,000 words in here. Those things have to go back up. They have to start happening within what I've already done. So some of it was that as well.
Well, it was super fun to read your pages because I can just feel the wheels turning, I guess, or the engine of the whole thing. And there were parts of it that felt super assured and like, oh, this is going to be good. And you really know this character now, which is what you've been circling around. Like, really, who is this and really what's going on here? And that was so fun to see. It was like, oh, yeah, more of this. This is great. This is going to be good. And then there were other parts that was like, what's happening here?
Yeah. One of the parts that was like this, it was in the wrong place. It was, I mean, like, I was trying to do too much sort of introductory throat clearing.
So Cage, I want to stop and ask you a question about something you just said, because you whizzed by it and it's like an incredible skill that you have where you said something was out of order. It wasn't that the thing was, what you wrote was not good or not right for the book. It was that you determined it was in the wrong place. And there's so much that goes into that. Like, it's about plot, but it's also about rhythm and pacing and feel. And I just feel like that's something a lot of people don't know how to do. Like, can you talk about that for a hot second?
I can try. Some of this I learned from Serena and from reading her thriller draft while she was still working on it and talking about the process of paying attention to what the reader learns when, both from a thriller, but this works, it's not just from a thriller perspective. It's also, I think, and we all have this urge to sort of like introduce, like you when you read Save the Cat and you read all this, there's an introductory period where you have to establish that, you know, your protagonist, everything is going wrong in their home life, their work life, and their emotional life. And the reason for that is the, you know, their emotional flaw. I'm probably mashing together a lot of different systems here. So you learn that. And then, you know, you want to write like 30,000 words of what's wrong with your character and what's going on. It's all backstory. And then, you know, maybe you do that and you realize there's not enough action in it and there's not you know, you do want the reader to know those things, but they need to know it more gradually. And then you start paying attention in the books that you're reading to how little you maybe know before things happen and how much fun it is to figure things out. Even silly things like, you know, why are they not going back to their apartment all day? And it turns out to be because their ex was clearing their stuff out of there that day or something like that. But they don't say that because that's not how they think about it. They just think, all right, can't go back to the apartment. Damn it. You know, and I just spilled coffee all over my shelf. Where am I going to take a shower? Better call this friend. And so your brain is like, wait, why can't you go back? And so building that is really hard. And I think paying close attention as you read and learning to pay attention even as you read for fun to what's making it fun is kind of what has helped me build that. And again, then watching Serena build her endings and be like, oh, I gave this up too soon, which is a different process. So I'm more in the, I took too long to tell you this, or I took too long to let this happen. I worried too much about telling you everything before I let it happen. I'm at that stage. Like, at the beginning of the book, things need to happen while you're telling the reader things.
Well, this is so good because what you're really saying is that you're not just writing your story. You're thinking about the reader's experience of your being in your story. I mean, that's the pro move, right?
I hope so.
Doing both things at the same time. Like, what is the reader going to know? What are they going to feel? What are they going to think? What's your question? What's going to be fun for them?
Yeah.
A good question.
Yeah. And this is a multi-protagonist book, or not multi, it's a multi-POV book with one protagonist. So that balance is also really interesting. And I've tried to pay attention to how other people do that. But that was part of it, was realizing that was the mistake that I was making, was I had, there's going to be five points of view, but as I said, one protagonist. And so I had given you two of the other points of view. And one of them, Summer, was embroiled in the action. Like, I feel like that one in turn, but the other one was too introductory. It was too much and so I moved that to after Nate breaks his leg. That's when we really meet her for the first time. And it's just very, and it, so it makes things happen faster.
That's so good.
Because we don't need an introduction to her. And we're not really getting an introduction to any of these other characters other than through the protagonist. You just suddenly get their point of view. And that's, I don't know, that it feels modern, it feels fast. We'll see.
Well, and it's the other point of view are there not to tell their own story.
Right.
Like that's a structure, but that's not your structure. They're there to help tell the protagonist's story.
Yeah, and to help. Yeah, they have their own stories, but they're there to tell. I mean, they're there to help tell the protagonist story, but really they're also there. They're there because they need to be there to tell the larger story.
Right.
So they're there for the plot story, but the plot story is also very intertwined with the protagonist's story. So, every time I go to them, it needs to be, why are we here? Like, I can't ever just go to that other point of view. So we learn what's going on with that point of view. That's not why they're there.
Right.
They're only there if it's something about the mystery or something about the protagonist.
That's good. That's a good stress test.
It is. And it's been, I mean, I'm glad I sort of sorted that out so quickly. I feel like in my initial draft of The Chicken Sisters, even though it didn't have other points of view, it had some extraneous subplots that were just there for the subplot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're on your way. And some of the writing was, like I said, I used the word assured. It was, I particularly love your writing about I mean, this book has a lot of the setting is important. There's a natural spaces setting that we're in a lot, and the way you write about that is really good and really puts us there. And it's clear that you've spent a lot of time in that space. You know, like literally walking through snow.
Yeah,
that is not a thing I've spent a lot of time doing, and your writing about it really put me there, which was cool.
And that is an interesting, I mean, I'm really enjoying this, that this is actually about something else, or a different person setting. I feel like when you read something like that, if you have spent a lot of time in that setting, then you can definitely tell. If it's not particularly important to the book, it's not necessarily annoying that maybe somebody got the setting wrong. But sometimes, you know, I was just reading something that I know was written by a writer who does not live in the part of the country that they were writing about. And I suspect never has, because I have lived in that part of the country. And there's this chunk that they wrote about a particular journey that is commonly to, and I don't, because this is someone I know, I'm gonna vague. But, and as someone who's experienced that particular journey that is taken within the process of living in this particular place, I'm like, oh, this person read about doing this thing on the internet. Like, you can just tell. And it's painful as someone who's been there. And it was some of what led me to stop reading the book, but not all of it. I could have tolerated that. And there are plenty of times where you're reading along and you're like, okay, I know this person's not really a vet. But they've clearly been in a vet's office, and it's fine. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm happy. It's working. It's working for me. So it's just one element, but it goes on the list, right? So I feel like that's something to be super careful about, is when you're kind of Googling to see what something's like, is, or maybe to play it down. It might have just been that there was a lot about this particular journey, and I was just like, it's not really quite right. Anyway,
I had a funny experience when I wrote my novel called The Threadbare Heart, which was so long ago that I can barely even remember what it was about. But there was a fire, and somebody lost a fabric collection in the fire that this was important to the story and to this character. I can't even tell you why that was so, but I do remember I did a lot of research on fabric collecting, why people do it, what they collect, how they store it, because I wanted to get those details right. And now I'm like wishing I remembered why I landed on that for this character. But the book had to do with what you would take in a fire, basically. And I think I needed somebody with something very physical. I think that's how I got there. But anyway, I had done all this research, and I quite love textiles in as a concept. I don't collect them my own self. I'm not a seamstress my own self, but I like them. And so I did a lot of research, and there's a whole quilt underworld out there of quilters, and I went down that rabbit hole. But the funny thing is that when the book came out, I got all of these requests from sewing places. Will you come on and talk about your fabric collection? Will you come on and talk about your sewing machines and how your grandmother taught you to sew? And I was like, oh, that was made up. My grandmother did not touch. I don't know how to sew. I don't have that sewing machine. But I was so proud, because it was not just one. It was a lot. I got a lot of requests that people thought this was an expertise that I had. And I was like, look at me. That.
Yeah, you did it. You got far enough into, I think there's the trick is to get far enough into something that you know a lot more than makes it into the book. And the mistake that was made in the thing that I was reading with was that this was a person who had essentially gone, okay, when you're in California, you get to, you know, Los Angeles from Santa Barbara by taking the one, and you see the following things. And therefore, yeah, I'm going to write those things. But they didn't, like, if they'd driven it 452 times, they might not have mentioned you take the one. They might have said, you know, that part where you see that one turn off and that my God, that rest stop has been closed since 1982. Like, they might have said something like that. And so you got deep enough to get into that, and the writer that I'm complaining about did not.
So interesting.
Yeah, and you shouldn't see it. That's the crazy stuff about this. Like everything else, you don't, as a reader, as a regular reader, who's not reading from a writery point of view, and even when you're a writer, you should not feel the sausage being made.
That is a great place for us to end.
All right, kids. Well, that's our week in writing. We hope your week in writing is going, Please do, talk to us in the comments on this. We will talk back. We'd read them. We'd love it.
Indeed.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.